Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this episode, I want to ask the question, when will the war in Ukraine finally end? Over the last 6 months, we've talked about a variety of different economic issues. We've been looking at what's been going on in Ukraine and what the knock-on impact of all of the issues are for the global economy. But the problem that we've all got is that whilst the war keeps going on, whilst we still have this uncertainty and all of the disruption to the international markets, we don't really know when we're going to be able to bottom out all of the implications and be able to start rebuilding. So as it sits right now, we're sitting on the verge of a global recession. It's very likely that by the end of 2022, we will see a lot of the Western world tipping over into recession. And the generally accepted definition of a recession is when we have two consecutive quarters of falling GDP. So we could hit that in September, or it might take until December. And it might be that we don't actually see those figures for another 6 or 8 weeks. So it might be the beginning of 2023 before we start seeing official declarations of recession. But either way, it's coming. It's likely to happen at some point in the next 6 months or so. And the big question then is, when will that recession end? Because recessions only run for a certain period of time. You have a downturn, and then eventually the economy will start picking up again and will recover and go back into a growth phase. But whilst the war in Ukraine keeps going on, it's going to add more pressure and potentially elongate that recession. So if it was to carry on to the end of 2022, that would probably push the recession some point through deep into 23. But if the war goes on right the way through 2023, then that could just leave us in a really uncertain position and keep that recession running. So it is a really big question. And the gains that have been made by Ukraine recently have really turned the events of the war on its head. At the start of September, we hadn't really heard any reports of significant movements. But over the last week or so, we've seen Ukraine gain around 6,000 square kilometres. So this is a huge step forward from the Ukrainian point of view. And the big question now is, what will President Putin do in response to this? So in today's video, I'll have a quick recap of the events in Ukraine over the last week. We'll then run through all of the different options that President Putin has available to him. And those options range from regrouping and trying to retake all of that lost territory, right through to a peace treaty. So I'll run you through a variety of different options and I'll look at the economic implications of those options. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summaries to what I think is likely to happen over the next 3 months in the war, because historically, that's a very difficult time to keep a war going because it gets very cold in this region. And I'll talk about the economic implications for Russia, Europe and the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can skip through things. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. As I mentioned at the start of the video, Ukraine have made remarkable gains over the course of the last week or so in its counter-offensives. And to cover that off, I just wanted to show you a short video which shows the actual areas that they've taken back from Russia.
Counter-offensive has reshaped the battlefield in a matter of days. They've taken more territory in the past week than Russia has since April.
Ukrainians have found a gap in the Russian lines and they pushed in here very quickly. They've moved very fast, they've got behind the Russians, and the Russian front has collapsed. And so this area now has turned back to Ukrainian control.
What kind of a difference have the Western supply of weapons made here? I want to zoom in as well on this region so we can look at it.
Well, I think what we've seen really is a number of things. First of all, that the Russian initial attack probably didn't have enough troops, and now they've run out of momentum, they're running out of troops, they're running out of often irreplaceable equipment using these new NATO standard artillery and rockets that have come in. The Ukrainians have been destroying all of the supply lines, the stocks of these weapons. Mm. And so it's been a very slow process and then suddenly a very quick one as the Russians collapse and they run out. And so and also what the Ukrainians have done very effectively is they've combined their different parts of the army, the Air Force, the ground troops, the rockets, and they've moved very quickly. So the Russians don't have enough forces to control this very long front line, and the Ukrainians have punched through that.
And that's where we see this, with the red as Russian territory on August 28th, and by September 11th, that is
exactly. So what we see, the Ukrainians came through here, they pushed on towards Kupiansk, which is a key sort of infrastructure point, and then they struck south, and then this key town, the Russians had to basically flee it in disorder and then try and regroup beyond the river.
And I just want to show for comparison, this was the map back on April 2nd, when we'd seen another sort of what Russia called regrouping after their withdrawal from Kiev there. But essentially, they had all this territory up here that they'd taken. They were still attacking from Crimea down there. And if you compare that now to what we're seeing, it's a net loss.
Yeah, I mean, the Russians are saying that the policing invasion is still going according to plan. But what you see there, as you say, is a series of losses for Russia. They've committed troops, first of all, in Kiev, then in Donetsk, then down to the south. Now they're trying to possibly push back. They may have lost up to 80,000 troops, 50,000 dead and another 30,000 injured, thousands of tanks and armoured vehicles. So for all of this period, they've suffered all those losses. And now Ukraine is I think, sensing that there are gaps where they can maybe move in further into the south. There's 15,000 to 20,000 Russian soldiers in Kherson on the western side of the river. They can't really get across. Yeah. Ukrainians are pushing here. It's possible the Ukrainians will do a third attack somewhere along this line. They'll look for gaps where the Russians can't now deploy to stop them, and they'll try and push in. So they'll keep the Russians on the back foot now up until the winter.
So let's talk about the options that President Putin has in front of him in terms of his response to Ukraine's counteroffensive. Well, the most obvious option is to regroup and attack, to try to take back all of this land that Russia has lost. But there's a major problem with that. Russia is struggling from a resources perspective. They've lost a lot of people. Now, we haven't seen any official numbers. Russia will not release any data as to how many people they've lost in this conflict. But the estimates that I've seen range between 15,000 and 50,000. And that's obviously a big range. But if they have lost as many as 50,000 personnel, that is a lot of casualties. And one of the reasons that Ukraine was successful in its counteroffensive over the last week or so is that in the areas that they've taken back, Russia didn't have the same volume of personnel and didn't have the level of military equipment it needed to be able to defend that land. So Russia is starting to show the strains of this long drawn out offensive that they've been involved with. So the big question with regards to regrouping and attacking is, do they have the sufficient resources? The director of Poland's Rocham Resources stated that Russia does not have the manpower to be able to man any sort of counteroffensive. Volunteer battalions are under strength, and the recruitment campaign is not delivering what was expected. He believes that fewer Russians now want to join the military, and if Moscow wants to add more manpower, it will need to conduct a mobilization. So it does seem that Russia is now struggling to get sufficient forces into the Ukraine area to be able to defend its positions. And in response to this, at the end of August, President Putin passed a decree increasing the size of Russia's armed forces from 1.9 million to just over 2 million. That increase included a boost of 137,000 in the number of combat personnel to 1.15 million. Now, officially, this was due to come into effect on the 1st of January. However, that date may now be brought forward given what's been going on in Ukraine over the last week or so. Now, interestingly, the last time President Putin increased the size of the Russian army was in November 2017, when the number of combat personnel was set at just over 1 million, and the total headcount of the armed forces was 1.9 million. President Putin's decree did not stipulate how the increase in headcount was to be achieved, but instructed the government to assign the corresponding budget. According to the International Institute for Strategic Studies, Russia had 900,000 active service personnel at the start of 2022, and reserves of 2 million people with service within the past 5 years. So it would seem that Russia is struggling in terms of active personnel who are ready to go out and fight on the front line. So the next option that's available to President Putin is to mobilise the 2 million personnel that they've got in reserve. So these are individuals who've served some form of military service within the last 5 years. So they're trained, but they're not in active service right now. Now, in these situations, it takes time to mobilise these people. These people will have jobs, they will be working. They will get a letter from Russia stating that they have to give up their work and go to the special military operation that's going on in Ukraine right now. Ordinarily, all these people would then go through a process of retraining. So they have to turn up and then refresh themselves in terms of all of their skills. Now, the question in this situation is whether or not Russia will decide to accelerate that retraining exercise or even bypass it entirely and send people out into Ukraine without any form of updated training. The other issues around mobilisation are that this would be an acknowledgement by Russia that they're involved in some form of war. Up until now, the invasion of Ukraine has been deemed a special military operation and therefore has been put on a lower level than a war. Calling more people up into the army is an acknowledgement that they're in some form of war, and it also admits that they're not winning because you wouldn't need to keep calling more people up if the offensive had been entirely successful. So there's a question mark as to whether or not President Putin will want to proceed with the mobilisation because of those issues. But the other factor here is that it's likely that most of the people who are reservists who are in this mobilisation camp won't want to go to Ukraine because they're living their normal everyday lives. They've got jobs and families. They're not interested in going over to Ukraine to fight a war that potentially Russia is now starting to lose. So there's a morale perspective amongst the individuals, and there's also a national morale issue. Because if Russia is seen to be losing this war, then President Putin could lose the support of all of his people. So there's a lot of really delicate issues at play here with regards to calling up more people to try to regain all of that ground that Russia has lost. An alternative to sending more men to the front line is to start using more Russian missiles to hit key strategic targets within Ukraine. And it was recently reported that Russia used missiles to attack a power station in Ukraine in order to take out the power and cause maximum chaos in that area.
On the edge of Kharkiv City, fire crews battle a blaze at one of Ukraine's biggest power and heating plants. Flames in the night sky are the only source of light as the region is plunged into darkness.
A missile struck an infrastructure site. Transformers, which serve the city of Kharkiv, were damaged.
Ukraine says Russian missiles struck across its east and south, destroying homes, with multiple fatalities reported. Russia's military denied striking civilian targets, saying it had launched an offensive against military objects. But Kyiv says Russia is retaliating by air as its infantry loses ground.
So President Putin does have the option of using cruise missiles, which can be specifically targeted to hit key Ukraine infrastructure. Now, the problem with that is that whilst that will cause a lot of disruption and will cause maximum problems for Ukraine, it doesn't enable Russia to actually regain that territory. All it will be doing is causing mass disruption. So Russia will need to have armed forces to follow up on any of these missile attacks if they're looking to try to take back that territory. But it is a very real option because Russia does have sophisticated missiles that it can deploy over long distances. So missiles are an option. And one of the ongoing concerns from Ukraine's perspective is the nuclear power plant that's been in the middle of the battlefield. And if Russia was to target that power plant and to send missiles into the plant itself, then that obviously could cause some form of nuclear disaster in Ukraine. Now, I don't think that they would do that, because that would really be cutting your nose off to spite your face. If Russia is invading Ukraine because it wants to take this territory permanently, it wants to make it part of an enlarged Russia, then the last thing that they would be interested in doing is setting off some form of nuclear explosion, because that would make all of that area completely unoccupiable. So Russia would be taking over ground that nobody can live in because it's contaminated with some form of radioactivity. Now, one of the tactics that President Putin was hoping was going to bring a quick resolution to this war was to threaten to switch off all of the energy supplies to Europe. So it's been reported that he was expecting that turning the pressure up on Germany and Italy and a lot of the big economies in Europe would encourage those countries to tell Ukraine to come to the table and agree some form of peace settlement. So in order to avoid a long drawn out war that went through the full winter period, because Russia is fully aware, even going back to Napoleonic times, of how difficult it is for people to engage in warfare during the Russian winter. And so it's been reported that he was hoping to avoid this winter conflict by turning up the pressure on Europe and getting everybody around the table. But clearly that has not worked, because Russia has already switched off the gas supplies to countries such as Poland and Denmark and Finland. And Nord Stream 1, which is the large pipeline that takes the majority of gas to Germany, one of the biggest buyers in Europe, has been out of service for most of the last month. The first part of the month, it was meant to be a maintenance period. And then we had all of these issues with regards to the turbine that had been sent to Canada by Siemens. And then the Canadian authorities said that it wasn't allowed to be sent back because of the sanctions. And then President Putin said that there was an oil leak that was stopping them from being able to put the gas through the pipe because it was potentially dangerous. So there's been a lot of reasons why Nord Stream has been switched off. But the bottom line is that most of the supply from Russia to Germany has been stopped for the last month or so. So we're already at that situation where Russia isn't supplying Europe for various reasons. And Europe isn't caving in. We're not seeing Germany and Italy or anybody else asking Ukraine to hand over the land that Russia is occupying. Far from it. We're actually seeing a lot more financial support going into Ukraine, a lot more military support. So they're being given weapons and lots of military expertise. And some of that has now resulted in these successful counter-offensives. So the concept of President Putin forcing Europe into some form of submission, saying, OK, we'll agree a peace agreement and let you have the land that you've already taken in Ukraine, hasn't happened. That hasn't worked. So I don't think there's an option for President Putin to force any of the countries into that position any longer, because we've already gone past the point of no return. Most of Europe is already assuming that all of the gas supplies will be switched off at some point in the near future and that Russian oil won't be available either. So everybody's preparing themselves. And on the positive front, from Europe's perspective, they've now got their gas storage facilities more than 80% full. This was a directive that the EU issued to all of the main countries, saying that they wanted to see 80% capacity by the 1st of November. Well, we're already there for most countries. So everyone's in a position now where they should have enough gas to at least see them through until February or March in a worst case scenario. That assumes that they can't get gas from other options such as Norway, LNG, all of those sort of things. So I don't think Europe is ready to give up on the fight against Russia. So Russia doesn't have the option of forcing them to do that. Another potential option available to President Putin is to try to call some form of peace deal, to actually ask Ukraine to come to the table and agree to sign up to some form of agreement, probably giving some land over to Russia. So what's the likelihood of that happening? Well, in my opinion, it's very unlikely. And on this matter, it's interesting that President Putin was reportedly offered a deal before the invasion started, whereby Ukraine would agree not to join NATO. So one of the big issues which caused the start of this invasion was that Ukraine had been courting NATO. They'd been talking to NATO about potentially joining. And Russia was furious about this because they don't want NATO on their border. Ukraine has a significant land border with Russia. And if Ukraine was to formally join NATO, that would mean that NATO bases could be set up in Ukraine all along the Russian border. So President Putin did not want that. He started amassing troops along the Ukrainian border at the end of 2021. And as the discussions between Ukraine and NATO started to pick up pace, he decided that he wanted to make the invasion. Because if he had invaded Ukraine after Ukraine joined NATO, then that would have brought the whole of NATO against Russia. And that's the last thing that President Putin wanted. So it's reported that this deal was put on the table, that there was some form of compromise that could have avoided the war. And it's then been reported that President Putin did not want that deal and he pushed on with the invasion instead. So I think that really shows us that there's very little chance that President Putin will offer some form of peace agreement, because he could have avoided the whole war entirely. He could have had what he wanted, that Ukraine wouldn't join NATO. But it seems that that wasn't good enough. That wasn't actually the end game here. So coming to some form of peace agreement now seems unlikely. And the other issues at play here are reputation and pride. President Putin is a proud man and he has a strong reputation of following through on what he says he's going to do. And the invasion of Ukraine was made for a variety of reasons and we haven't got resolution on many of those factors. So I really don't think it's likely that President Putin will want to abandon all of his policies and his pride and walk away from this war. Now, I wanted to cover off all of the potential options. So the final option, the Armageddon option, is obviously for Russia to go nuclear. So what are the chances that President Putin decides that he wants to press the red button? Well, Tony Brenton, who's a former British ambassador to Russia, thinks that there is a possibility. In a quasi-autobiography written by President Putin in 2000, He recalled cornering a rat in a corner with a stick when growing up in a dilapidated apartment building in Leningrad, and being surprised when the cornered animal threw itself at him and turned the tables. And Tony Brenton has warned that a cornered Putin could go nuclear if he faced a humiliating defeat with no face-saving off-ramp. If the choice for Russia is fighting a losing war and losing badly and President Putin falling, or some kind of nuclear demonstration, I wouldn't bet that they wouldn't go for the nuclear demonstration. However, retired US General Ben Hodges, former commander of the US Army Forces in Europe, thinks that whilst there is a potential risk, it's unlikely to happen. There is no real battlefield advantage to be gained. It would be impossible for the US to stay out and not respond, and I don't think Putin or his closest advisors are suicidal. So I wanted to give you a balanced perspective, and I'll let you make your own decision as to whether or not you think there's any possibility of Russia deploying some form of nuclear weapons. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because what's happening on the ground in Ukraine right now is really starting to get interesting. Over the last week or so, we've seen the most positive developments from the Ukrainian perspective since the start of the war. There seems to be a turning of the tide, a change in momentum. Ukraine are now getting the upper hand in certain areas, and they're using a lot of military equipment that's being provided to them by NATO. So they've got some really sophisticated equipment on the ground. And one of the interesting things about the warfare is that Russia haven't been able to dominate in the air. You would have expected that a lot of Russian jets would have come over Ukraine, but the anti-aircraft missiles that Ukraine are using, which are being provided by NATO, are very sophisticated. And there were a number of strikes early in the conflict, which has really caused Russia to pull back from a jet perspective. So given the recent developments, the big question now is, what are Russia going to do? And that's why I wanted to run through all of the different options. I think the summary from what we've just discussed is that Russia looked to be struggling from a resource perspective. It looks from what's happening that Russia were not expecting this war to last for more than 6 months, but it's now been going on for around 7 months, and there doesn't seem to be any obvious end in sight. So Russia are now facing the prospect of having to dig in for the long term to send more people and more resources into Ukraine to maintain the positions that they've already got, or they're going to start losing because Ukraine are really stepping things up, and we're also going into the winter period. And the problem that Russia have is that they're operating overseas. They're in another country. So they need to set up supply lines to keep all of their armed forces fed and lots more military equipment coming through. And that's difficult in the winter period because you've got the simple problem of snow and ice and all of the other issues that will be happening on the ground. So the likelihood is that over the next few months, Ukraine will start having a physical advantage because they're on home territory. They can easily keep all of their troops supplied. So we may well see Ukraine taking more ground and Russia losing more face. And the big question then will be, what will President Putin do if we get to November, December, and Russia is losing thousands of kilometers every single week? What will his response be? So that's why I wanted to run through all of the different options. I think fundamentally here, Russia are potentially fighting a losing battle. In the long term, it looks unlikely that they will be able to win this war. They may defend some of the territories that they've got in a stronger fashion than they've done recently, but ultimately, we've got a lot of financial and military support going into Ukraine, and Ukraine are not offering any form of peace agreement. They're not offering to hand over land to Russia. They are fighting tooth and nail to keep what's theirs. So as it stands right now, it's hard to call what's happening, but I don't think we're going to see a peace treaty signed. So it's likely that this war will run on at least until the end of 2022, but quite probably it will carry on into 2023 as well. As I mentioned in a recent video, when Russia invaded Chechnya back in 2000, that war actually went on for 9 years. Now, I know it's different circumstances because Chechnya is much smaller and the Russian casualties weren't as great as they are right now. But it shows us that President Putin doesn't give up. Once he starts a war, a conflict, he wants to see it through to its natural conclusion. So it's very possible that this war could carry on until at least the start of 2023, but it could go on for much, much longer. And the impact of all of this on the European and global economy is bad news because it will keep high levels of uncertainty in the markets. We'll have ongoing issues with regards to the supply of gas and oil and food and other commodity items. So that's going to keep prices high. We've already got high inflation all around the world. So that's going to keep inflation rates up. That's going to put more pressure on the European and global economy. Now, as I said at the start of the video, it's likely that we'll hit a recession at some point early in 2023. And that recession could get worse the longer this war goes on. So we don't really know where the bottom is on the market right now. If this war continues, if Russia decides that it wants to dig in and just keep going for as long as physically possible, then that could cause us to have a very long and deep recession. I posted a video recently talking about an internal paper that's been leaked from Russia, which is admitting that Russia is likely to hit a really big depression. It's going to see a big fall in its economy over the next 12 months. But we could also see a big fall in the European and global economy at the same time. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when I see them. If you've liked what I've said today, if you thought it was interesting and thought-provoking, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.